Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bengal Tiger Podcast. I'm Matthew Bruni, and joining me once again for this mailbag episode is Shay Dixon. Shay, we got the mailbag going again. It's been probably a month, I think, since the we did it at the Georgia game before the Georgia game was the last time. So it's been a while.
We're back. Yes, everyone, each week, if you're a member of the Bengal Tiger, you can get your questions in on the board. Maddie B on Sundays. We'll start a thread. You see it pinned at the top. Get your questions in. We'll answer them. But we'll get to that. Let's start here because I wanted to talk for a couple minutes about this.
Yes.
LSU welcomed 23 new players to the roster this past weekend. That's all 10 transfers that they've announced and landed commitments from. And then 13 of the 25 high school signees are early enrollees. Some people are asking me if that's a record for LSU, 13. It's among the most I can remember. I'd have to go back and look, but we're trending more towards that as kids have the early signing period in December. They know that they want to enroll early, so they make a point as sophomores, juniors, whatever it might be, to get their coursework together in a spot where they can leave high school at the end of the semester in the fall as seniors and enroll at LSU while still being technically a senior in high school. Starting their college careers, kind of getting rolling and acclimated to being part of the team, being part of the program. And Maddie B, you look at these 23, and I'm counting, certainly in the transfers, a handful of them, but also in the 25 high school signees of these 13 enrollees, a number of guys that could be instant impact. Do you have one guy or two guys that jump off of the list of, hey, it was paramount they got that guy in early? And maybe let's focus on high school because a lot of these college guys have already been playing. They're coming straight off a college season. Adjusting isn't as big for them. But high school to college, especially the SEC, big adjustment. And why this is big is kids who arrive now in January will be working out with the team. They'll go through all of spring practice. They'll sit in on every team meeting and take part in it. And they'll get to go to school and get acclimated to just carrying a college course load. So you get a real advantage by coming in early as an early enrollee and having a whole semester head start on the rest of the guys who get here in the summer. Give me number one on your list. Is it obvious? Because the best player, the highest ranked player in the class, at least one of them, is an early enrollee. So is Deshaun Womack the answer here? Because he is a guy that many people think Matty B will be the heir apparent and a soon-to-be starter at the Jack position with B.J. Ojulari headed to the NFL draft.
I think Deshaun Womack is the most obvious and the correct answer for everything you just said. I mean, there is a starting spot that is open, that is vacant on this team. And Deshaun Womack, with that extra time, should be able to come in and compete for that job early. You know what you're going to get from him when you see him in the spring. You'll be able to see also, you know, guys like Braden Swenson in the room and Ovia Gofu now as well. So you get to see all of your options at the Jack position early, and I think that's a real advantage. Obviously, Brian Kelly's talked a lot about how important it is to get these freshmen in early. As early enrollees. And I think, you know, the exception is obviously Harold Perkins. Like, if you have Harold Perkins talent, then you're good. You could just show up and play. But we even saw with Harold Perkins that they were like, hey, you know, he needs some time. You know, the first few games he didn't play a ton because they were hesitant of getting him acclimated, of getting him, you know, better understanding of the playbook and stuff like that and the scheme. So what would have happened if he would have enrolled and obviously committed earlier and enrolled early? Like, could he have been a day one starter? Like, that's the type of difference that we're talking. It might not change the outcome of a season, but in game one and game two, like, that's where we could see this. So Deshaun Womack at the Jack position is number one for me. I'll throw out there, I think Javian Toviano is in a really interesting spot too, because we talked about him coming to LSU and playing corner, boundary corner pretty much, or at least them trying him out there. He was recruited as a safety out of Arlington Martin. Very, very talented player. I mean, I love his tape. Obviously, he's a high four-star guy. But now with him early enrolling and him playing in the spring, you get to, I feel like you get to try him out at different spots. Like, you don't have, or you're not restricted to be like, okay, he's here in the summer, let's just throw him at corner and he's probably going to redshirt and let's just, you know, see how he develops. I feel like during the spring, you can put him at corner, you can put him at nickel, you can put him at safety, you could try him all over and then see where he's comfortable and go into summer with a better idea of where he needs to do, what he needs to do moving forward.
I like that one a lot. And look, I just sent you over this list of early enrollees just so we didn't miss anybody. And certainly you look at Jeremiah Hughes and Toviano. Hughes is a pure corner, but Toviano, a guy, as you mentioned, high school safety. They're the two corners that were coming in now. And we're talking about Toviano as a corner, Matty B, because when they were recruiting him and then when they closed him in early December, it was like, we have to have you. Well, at corner, since he signed, they've added four transfer corners, all who have played college, you know, played football at the college level. None were like backups, like anywhere that, you know, had never started. Now it becomes less of a need. I like what you're saying about, okay, maybe now we can try him, you know, at nickel, at safety, at corner, get a feel for him everywhere. Because I almost get the sense that, because of, look, they took 10 transfers, five are defensive linemen, four are corners, and one's a receiver. You almost now have more of at least a proven depth concern, or at least something to note at safety. They have now less guys at safety coming back than they do at corner in terms of guys who have played college football. So I know Greg Brooks is back. Major Burns is back. We'll see if Sage Ryan, what he does. I know we've got a question coming up in the mailbag about him, but we'll be curious if Toviano doesn't bounce around. I'll give you one more. I think Whit Weeks it was almost a must that you only signed two high school linebackers, that you at least got one of them to campus, and Weeks is the more highly ranked one because they now enter the offseason. Weeks moved to campus this past weekend. His brother is the only backup linebacker they have on scholarship right now, West Weeks. Then they have the two starters back in Harold Perkins and Greg Penn. And that's assuming really that you're making Harold Perkins a middle linebacker in this discussion of linebackers, keeping two on the field. He had kind of moved around a lot, had played some edge rusher in year one. But linebacker-wise, who they have in that room, only three scholarship linebackers. Now they have four with Whit Weeks coming to campus. Christian Braithwaite gets here in the summer, but there's a lot of buzz around Whit Weeks right now. And you feel like him getting here early and getting with Matt House, the defensive coordinator and linebackers coach, and just getting up to speed will be big, because unless they're going on some run in the portal like they did at corner with the linebacker position, which we know that they're going after guys and they'll add one and maybe two, but by default right now, Whit Weeks is in the two deep. And if that's the case, you'd like him to be as far along as, you know, you possibly can have.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with that. The linebacker position is so fascinating. I know we have a question on it in the mailbag as well, but Whit Weeks, I mean, has been all the talk pretty much over the past few weeks with his performance at the All-American Week and everything Billy's seen, everything you've seen, everything we've talked about. So Whit will definitely be competing for, you know, either a starting job or that next up role there, depending on what they do in the portal. Just players I'm excited to see. Obviously, Jaylen Brown, receiver out of Miami. He had a really good week at the All-American stuff in San Antonio. Billy saw him a lot. He's really, really smooth, really fast. I mean, especially with Kayshawn Boutte gone now, it feels like there is a path to these freshmen coming in and playing at receiver a little bit more. And I'm speaking specifically of Jaylen Brown and Shelton Sampson eventually when he gets on campus. But Jaylen Brown's obviously the early enrollee here. You now, with Kayshawn gone, you have your top two of Malik and Brian Thomas. You have Aaron Anderson, you know, in the slot, let's say. But outside of that, you're really putting him against what, Kyron Lacy, Landon Ibieta, Chris Hilton. I was off the top of my head, Chris Hilton. Like, you're putting him in that conversation. I feel like that's a very manageable expectations for a guy like Jaylen Brown, who we're pretty high on coming out of high school. So, yeah, he's one I'm excited to see. And then, honestly, just from a curiosity standpoint, I want to see Trey Holly, because he was obviously so productive in high school. you want to see how that translates and how that looks like at a level like LSU.
I'm excited to see it, like a number of these guys. And let me refresh people. They took 10 transfers and 25 high school signees. A year ago, they took almost 20 transfers and 15 high school signees. So both in Brian Kelly's first year and second year, he's taken about 35 new guys onto the roster, but he's flipped what obviously is the majority of them. Now taking more high school guys, the goal would be to get these guys into the program and develop them and use the portal just to kind of patch holes in the roster as they get a deeper roster and it filled out from where it was when Brian Kelly took over. They'll kind of really get into a groove with that. But I could also make the case, we'll debate this on a future pod, that I like these 35 more maybe than I even liked last year's 35. And there were some instant starters from that freshman class. I think it's because I like the transfers a little bit more in this class. But again, there were some pretty good transfers last year. Tough. Well, and we already know the answer to one side. We've never seen what these other guys are going to do. Right. So maybe really a debate for down the road. But LSU brings, again, all 10 transfers, 13 early enrollees, 23 new guys to the roster, all got here over the weekend. And Matty B, that's kind of that's the news you wanted. That is the biggest news to start the month, was getting all these guys to campus. And we'll see what they do in the transfer portal the rest of the way.
Yeah, no Jaden Rashada type situations over here.
Oh, goodness gracious. That is, if you don't follow Florida recruiting, now is the time to do it. It is wild out there. All right, let's jump in to why we're here at the mailbag. Question number one, Cairo Tiger comes right out of the gates. Which scheme changes do you guys see on offense next season? Any potential for a two quarterback system? Now, let's jump out the gates here and define this. What is a two quarterback system?
That's a great question.
Is it where Nussmeier just gets to come in? Like, it has to be scripted, right? Like,
yes. Yes, it has to be scripted, I think, initially, but also I feel like it has to be situational at the same time, which is hard. Like, there are very few teams, if ever, that have successfully pulled off a two quarterback system. And if y'all have multiple ones, then please send them my way. Like, I just can't, off the top of my head, college or NFL, I can't think of any.
Yeah, LSU did it with a national championship team 20 years ago, 2007, I guess.
Yeah.
When Flynn was the quarterback and Ryan Perilou was a five-star signee, but he would just come in just strictly to run the football, and then he could pop passes on you because they thought they were going to run the football on you.
That makes sense. That we've seen that before. That like Taysom Hill, right? Like, we've seen that with the Saints before, like where you bring him in as a gadget player. Neither one of these guys are gadget players. Daniels and Nussmeier are quarterbacks, and very, very high level quarterbacks at that. So I can't remember, like, we've seen two high level quarterbacks, like throw the ball quarterbacks, do that. So, but any potential for it, in my opinion, two quarterback system would mean that both get a lot of reps in every game pretty much. And that's the plan. I can't see that.
I'll say this, and I think we have so far to go until we know if it's a two quarterback system, really. I'll say that, and really, it's again of how you define a two quarterback system. I truly believe, at least if Nussmeier continues to develop this offseason, and obviously Jaden will develop as well, but you kind of, Nussmeier's development can kind of probably, like, he has a lot more ground that he can make up. So he may really take strides to where Jaden's kind of fine tuned a lot of different parts of his game. I will say that they were probably less hesitant next year to put Nuss into a game if Jaden's not playing well. Like, we saw games this year where Jaden did not play well, and they weren't putting Nuss in. They were rolling with Jaden. So I could see next year them being less hesitant to say, all right, we're getting Nuss into the football game.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, if Auburn happens again, like that Auburn game, and you're
Arkansas.
Going into the second – yeah, Arkansas game. Like, you're going in the second half. Like, Jaden was sick for that Arkansas game. And they still didn't put Nussmeier in, and which was, and looking back on it, is crazy.
At the end of the year, he was walking around on one leg, and they weren't
putting Nussmeier. Like, if those situations happen again next year, there is no excuse not to put Nussmeier in. Like, that needs to be quick. And that's not because Jaden's like, that's not saying he's going to lose his job, but that needs to be, you know, hey, we're going to be very fluid with the situation. If we go a quarter and a half and we don't pick up a first down, like, yeah, we're going to shake things up. We're going to move. Like, we have bigger aspirations going into next year. And for that reason, standards have to be raised.
And he asked about scheme changes on offense. I think scheme-wise, it'll be a – I mean, they'll fine-tune what they did this year. I think that they want to be more 12 personnel, which is multiple tight ends. We saw Georgia win back-to-back national championships running very much similar offense that Todd Monken runs. So that'd be my initial takeaway. They just didn't have the personnel for it this year. And I think that they've got better depth at tight end, obviously. So maybe they can move more into Denbrock's wheelhouse.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about early enrollees, but Mac Markway coming in, he's probably the biggest question mark at tight end, obviously coming off the injuries that he's had, but supposed to be a very, very good blocker and kind of physically ready. Jackson McGohan, one of my favorite players. I have him over like Kamorian Pimpton in my rankings, personal rankings. Like, I really liked McGohan's tape. And then you have Pimpton, who is awesome as well. But Pimpton and McGowan are also kind of like more receiver type builds. They need to fill out, you know, get a little bit better blocking, definitely, to get on that. But remember, Mason Taylor wasn't a good blocker when he started off. So I think there's room to grow. I definitely do think we see those freshman tight ends in a, you know, involved in the offense this year. And that speaks to what you're saying about more 12 personnel. And that doesn't mean that they have to be lining up with five linemen and both tight ends, you know, on the line of scrimmage. Like, Mason Taylor was flanked out as a receiver half the time and moved in, move around. So, yeah, I definitely agree with you.
Bourbon and Cheerios, who's going to have a million questions. Maybe I'll just answer some of his, as always, on the board. He loves to drop the five different questions, including some about aliens and New Year's resolutions. I don't have any New Year's resolutions. Maddie B, did you?
No.
We're just keeping it rolling.
Keeping it
rolling. My New Year's resolution is to do this podcast for you guys.
Yeah, bring it back.
But he does always do it correctly. And for his first question is actually a real question. So are you sweating linebacker depth? We just touched on this a minute ago, but they've got only four scholarship linebackers for the spring, five total scholarship linebackers, and two of the five will be true freshmen. You're sweating it. Hell, one of those five doesn't even play linebacker right now, Harold Perkins.
So. I was going to say, like – yeah, and I've talked about this before. Harold Perkins, moving him to inside linebacker, I feel like when you move him to inside linebacker, you are losing that pass rush ability. And if you say you're going to blitz him a lot still, then really you don't have two true inside linebackers there playing. Like, you don't have a Penn and Baskerville type dynamic there because they didn't blitz a ton. You didn't need to blitz a ton. That was kind of the strength of their defense, was you could get pressure with just having BJ and Harold on the edges and just going. And, you know, Makai Wingo going. So maybe they do move him to inside. Maybe they keep him at kind of like a different rover type position if you don't want to put him at jack. That's going to be a really interesting development to watch over spring. But for now, I think we can pencil him in, I guess, at inside just for depth purposes. But, yeah, like you said, they don't have bodies at all. And I think they'll add one or two out of the portal. If they can get to six, I feel a lot better. I think they'll probably end up adding a back-end type guy like Colby Field was, just for strictly just to have. But, yeah, they're in a tough spot.
I agree with you. It's a concern for me. I do think that they will add one or two out of the portal. I agree with you. And we will see kind of what the depth looks like come fall camp, or at least as we get into the summer months. But I will say Wes Weeks' younger brother is excellent in coverage as well. So I think he's a really saving grace for them. He's going to end up a top 150 type player and not a guy that everyone talked about all cycle as, you know, some massive land for him, but it's becoming evident after his senior year and then what he did in San Antonio at the All-American Bowl week that he's a hell of a player. Yep. We got some Pat Forty talk in there. We'll skip by all these. Dick Vitale, Cairo again. Hunter Fournette. I don't want to skip him. He says he has a legit question. With the cornerbacks we got in the portal, do you think Tuviano gets run at safety, or do they stick with him at corner? You spoiled it for Hunter because you already answered that.
Yeah, my fault, Hunter. I didn't see that.
My bad, Hunter. But we both agree, right, that spring, with him being here, the fact that you signed all those corners out of the portal, I think they do stick with Tuviano at corner, but I also think that they can move him around. You have 15 practices, so you've got time to move him around.
It's kind of like where will the coaching staff see his highest upside and potential? Because I think that's why they wanted to move him in corner. Safety. Yeah. So I think they wanted to see him at corner just because physically he is kind of, you know, he's a big guy and he has good speed. And I think if he can get to that level, but asking a guy to move from safety to corner at the college level
in the SEC.
In the SEC is such a big change, and now you don't need him to move to corner. So I would be like, hey, let's just try the safety thing and see how comfortable and how dynamic he could be, because he has potential at safety to be like a real contributor this year.
He's a top five safety in the country right now on the rankings. And I'll also say it wasn't a situation where he was like, I'm only coming there if I play corner. I talked to him about this after in Orlando at the Under Armour All-American Bowl week. And he'd already signed, and he said, look, I'm coming in to play corner because they didn't have any when I signed. I'll play safety, nickel, corner. It doesn't matter to me. So he's going to obviously be open to whatever. His natural position is safety. It will be interesting to see how that one plays out. Cairo has his question that kind of ties into this. Where does Sage Ryan fit in? Would love to see him get some run at safety. Correct me if I'm wrong. This year they primarily used him at nickel.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he did play a little bit of safety, but yeah, nickel for the most part, yes.
Would you rather see him at safety? That means essentially you've got him covering a little bit less and maybe coming back into the box a little more and showing off the physicality.
It's hard. It's hard because he is kind of like a tweener in a lot of ways. He's clearly athletic, clearly like can make plays. You want him to be, if he does play safety, and even at nickel, you want him to take after Greg Brooks. Like, you want him to be that Greg Brooks level playmaker and athlete to where he kind of just is everywhere all at once. But whenever Sage is on the field, it feels like he's nowhere. Like, and that sounds bad, but you want to see him kind of break out. I just think there's a real hole right now at nickel. Could that be Deuce Chestnut? Could that be? I actually really like Jordan Allen, which nobody really remembers from last year's class. Jordan Allen was at nickel, and he's physically, I think, could be a guy that gets playing time there this year. But the guy who I'm penciling in right now at nickel is probably Sage Ryan. So we'll see if he stays there. I would rather play him at nickel than safety, I think, unless if he's improved his game somewhere.
I'm torn. I don't know. And I think this might just depend on what they do with Greg Brooks, because as you said, Deuce Chestnut comes in from Syracuse. If he can play nickel, that moves Greg Brooks back to safety. And then where do you get Sage on the field from there? We'll see. Spring will be a very intriguing time to see what they do in the defensive backfield and where guys are getting reps at. And we'll learn more in March and April about that. Go Doc. Do you think Zaylance Hurd, 5-star offensive tackle signee, is a day one starter? I'll say no.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Because he's not an early enrollee either. So I liken it to what happened a year ago. Two guys got to start as true freshmen on the offensive line. The one who plays left tackle, Will Campbell, was an early enrollee. He started game one. The one who was not an early enrollee, Emory Jones, who played right tackle, didn't start until what, like week 3 or 4?
Yeah.
Something like that. So
3, Mississippi State.
And remember, Brad Davis is been on the staff a couple years now. Matty B's not hesitant to move a lot of guys around and try different like starting lineup combinations. So I think Hurd will get his shot. I don't know if it'll be game one.
It's interesting because the tackle position, like unless if Emory Jones stays a tackle, which he very well could, he could stay a tackle. But you look at Emory Jones, Garrett Dellinger, Miles Frazier, S3 with, you know, Anthony Bradford gone now. I look at all three of those as guards, and then you have Will Campbell at tackle. And so then in theory, you do have another tackle spot open. But then I think at the end of the day, you could just leave Emory Jones out there and kind of play from there. But when people are, you know, writing out a 2-deep in their heads, it looks pretty easy to put Zaylance Hurd at tackle and bump Emory Jones inside and then have Dellinger probably at the other guard spot, or Dellinger or Frazier at the other guard spot, and just kind of play from there. Like that is, I think that could be an ideal one if Zaylance Hurd comes in and is already at that Will Campbell level. I've said it before, I don't want to underappreciate how difficult it was to do what Campbell and Jones just did this season. Like, that was incredible. So I don't want to put those expectations on Hurd, but I do think he's capable of doing that.
He's that good. He'll play next year. I just don't know which week it'll be. And then he asked OT, now that Simone got her statue, who's next? Well, I think if it's male, it's Burrow.
Joe Burrow.
If it's female, it's Big Sill.
Yeah. I feel like they're good on basketball ones for a while, though. So, right? Like, they have the four lined up right there.
They look good out there, too.
Yeah. That's an incredible, like.
There were a lot of people there for the Simone reveal. Dude,
I walked up because I was at the Pete Maravich one, for whatever reason, probably because there wasn't a game after it, and it was, like, you know, over summer, so there weren't a ton of students there or nothing like that. But I went to the Pete Maravich one, and there was probably, you know, a few hundred there. Man, that's Simone Augustus one. I walked up, and I was like, I can't see anything. Like, I couldn't believe how packed it was, but that was awesome. So shout out to them.
Yeah, they had 11,000 people there yesterday, packed house. Misled Alarm 92, who's the most impressive offensive weapon we signed? Well, they only signed one transfer on offense, and I think he belongs in the conversation, Aaron Anderson. I'll go Aaron Anderson or Kamorian Pimpton.
I like
tight
that.
End.
I like that. I'll go Aaron Anderson or Jackson McGowan.
So we're both going the only transfer on offense and then the tight end. I like it.
Yeah, I think Aaron Anderson.
We're not hurting any receiver signees' feelings with that decision there.
I've already raved about Jaylen Brown, and okay. I think Shelton Sampson also will creep in there.
Irish Tiger 18, do we run any under center stuff, especially in short yardage situations next year? Matty B, you dove very deep into Den Brock's time at Cincinnati. Did they ever run? Did they go under center very much?
Yeah, there were some times with Desmond Ridder. But at the end of the day, I think with Jaden Daniels, him being in the shotgun allows you to have more of that read option type stuff, allows him to see the defense earlier. He doesn't have to turn his back for handoffs, obviously. Like, it just opens up. I feel like when you have a mobile quarterback like that, you have to kind of play out of the shotgun. Now, you did ask short yardage stuff specifically. In short yardage stuff, they were still giving Daniels the option to keep, which sometimes worked, sometimes didn't work. But I think at the end of the day, you want the ball in his hands in most situations where you're deciding the outcome of a first down or a game or a touchdown and so on and so forth.
We'll see. Be intriguing. But yeah, so many teams just not operating out of under center anymore, even in short
yardage. As long as they don't do the as long as they don't go to the Wildcat like they did 2 years ago.
No, that was awful.
They said they didn't even practice it.
Yeah, we never practiced it. Different time.
That year was hilarious.
No, golly. All right, keep it moving. Tiger Mike, breakout players on offense and defense next year.
Okay, hold on. Let me think.
I'm going to go. Brian Thomas on offense.
That's a good one.
I think he'll be the number two receiver behind Neighbors. I'm going to go Greg Penn on defense. I think at this time next year, people are saying, damn, Greg Penn played a lot better than he did the year before. He sucked the year before. If Matt House trusts him to be out there from every single start this year, he sees something. They had other options.
Yeah. Okay. Defense, I have my answer. Offense, it's kind of tough. It is really difficult, actually. But defense, I'm going to go Quincy Wiggins. And I think we actually have a question about Quincy on here as well. But, like, Quincy Wiggins to me is obviously lost on the shuffle because he just didn't play this past year. But I think he can compete with Savion Jones for that starting defensive end spot. Like, I think that is the spot where he can really, really compete, if not get the job with Savion. I think Savion's really good. We've kind of talked about how he needs to round out his game a little bit, which is why people wanted him to start over Ollie Gay. Just that wasn't realistic. He needed to round out his game. Maybe he does that. I'm pretty high on Savion Jones. I think Quincy Wiggins physically can get there. He has the upside. He has the potential athletically. We'll see how it pans out. But I think Quincy Wiggins is someone who, even though we didn't see him this year, I think he could have a really good 2023, whether he's starting or not. Offense. Jeez. Offense, give me – it's one of the two receivers here. It's either Hilton or Ibieta. Just give me Chris Hilton.
Got to stay healthy.
Yes, has to stay healthy, but I have no problem gambling on his speed.
All right. You picked a bunch of – I mean, Womack, yeah. All those edge DN guys could have big years. Could have picked Mason Smith. I mean,
I also like
my breakout player was the person who led the team in tackles this year. So I kind of not sure how breakout that is.
No, that's a breakout player. If he has a good year next year, you can pull this tape and be like, I told y'all. So there you go.
All right. Mr. Virgo, if you had to predict now, who are your starting corners? Oh, man.
That's so tough for me.
It is. So I'm going straight gut. I think that Greg Brooks plays safety next year because I think they need it. And I will go, give me transfer. Denver Harris and Zai Alexander on the outsides and Deuce Chestnut at nickel.
Yeah, I think – yeah, I'll put Deuce. I know I said earlier I was like I could see Sage at nickel. I just worry about Sage. Sage isn't as good in coverage as Deuce, like not even close to as good in coverage as Deuce. And Deuce has the experience, has made plays. He doesn't mind being physical. I could see Deuce Chestnut at a nickel spot. My only question is obviously they've gone big or they went big last year. They, you know, 2 years ago was Cordell Flott, who's had a really nice play in the Giants win last night. So shout out to him. But so that is my concern, is that maybe he's not big enough, but Sage Ryan isn't any bigger. So if I'm choosing between them, I'll go Deuce. I do think Denver Harris is my cornerback one right now. And then J.K. Johnson and Zai Alexander at the other cornerback spot is very challenging. Like I write out in my notes, I put out just my ratings after I watch all the films of everybody, just my personal ones. I have Zai, Deuce and JK all at the same rating. So I'll go Zai though. I'll go Zai Alexander just for now. I think JK is really, really good and will play, but I'll go Zai as cornerback too.
It's going to be an interesting debate this offseason. Gosh, that'll be fun to watch. Outside of being a return specialist, this is Cordell. Do you think Aaron Anderson will start in the slot receiver? Ooh, golly. I just forgot about Aaron Anderson and breakout players. Do you think Aaron Anderson starts at receiver?
Yes. Like I think if they go with what they did last year to a degree where they have the three receiver sets, I think he is the inside slot receiver. Like he is the one in between Brian Thomas and Malik for the most part. I think Aaron Anderson gets a lot of playing time. I don't know if I would have him as a breakout player. We'll see. Obviously, I think he's going to be good. But I don't know how many targets, receptions he has with Mason Taylor there, with Malik there, with Brian Thomas there. Like, he'll have a good year, but I don't know how stats he'll put up.
I do think he could. They got some good receivers, and they'll rotate them. We saw it this year. They rotated to the point of people complaining often. So all these guys will definitely get in. Gosh, I'm excited to see Aaron Anderson. Zud the Hutt, how do we improve special teams? I know Polian's not going to be fired. But special teams did cost us games this year, made it, he said, terrible mistakes, Florida State, Tennessee, Georgia. I don't like Ramos as our place kicker because his kicks can be blocked with low trajectory and the short range seems about 40 to 45 yards. Punter's good. Hopefully we have a new punt and kick returner.
I mean, yeah.
How do you go about fixing – what's your suggestion here?
I'm not a special teams coach. It feels like as long as it's emphasized and Brian Kelly will have – all attention on it. Like, obviously, first thing is you hope they have even better players, but they did have a lot of, like, starters. They had a lot of two-deep guys on their special teams last year, so you can't even really blame that. I think that with having an entire offseason focused on it, dedicated to it to a degree, obviously you don't have to – you shouldn't have to worry about the return position now. Let's just say Aaron Anderson, just throw him back there. You'll be fine. And honestly – even though the mistakes were you know, widespread and they were happening almost every game, if you take out all of the punt and kick return mistakes, it is a lot more manageable. You can live with a lot more of those stuff. Like, it wasn't good. I'm not saying it was good, but if you take off Jack Besh, you know, fumbling the Tennessee kickoff, if you take away the Malik Florida State games, if you take away those type of plays, it doesn't look as bad. So hopefully Aaron Anderson can clean that up. Obviously, you know, the instance that happened in the Georgia game where they didn't know the rule of it not being down is inexcusable. We've said that. Now hopefully they'll know the rule. So you just, you know, you build on it. I don't know if there's a ton you can do besides focus on it and play. As far as Ramos goes, I think ideally, I do think he has a kind of a low trajectory on his kicks, but he made his kicks, and as long as you protect, I think he's okay.
We'll see if they have any battle there between him and Dibert at the kicker spot, but
yeah, I could see it.
Long snapper's taken care of, punter's taken care of. Aaron Anderson may well win the return job, so we'll see. They need to cut down on things that were simple mistakes, like the Florida State game was blocking on extra points. The catching the football was an issue for a long time before Greg Clayton stepped in and started to do it. Now, don't kick it out of bounds on kickoffs. These are things you can correct. Hold that tiger. How many more transfers does LSU take? Do you expect it before the next portal window opens? They have 8 open spots. This is an easy, quick one. 8 open spots. Some will go to walk-ons, former walk-ons. I bet they take 2, 3, 4 more transfers. The rest will be either a late high school ad or give it to walk-ons, have the spots open. I'd be surprised if they add any more right now before the next. Not surprised. I just don't expect it, but that could turn if they find a linebacker or two that they really want to go after and can get in for the spring semester. If not, these guys would be arriving in the summer months. So by far the bulk of it, the 10 are in. So I'd say 2 to 4 more probably.
Yeah, I agree.
Keep it rocking. That was a basketball question. We're going to move past that one.
Yep.
Were the rankings, this is Jimmy Chill, ranking services, were they off with 5 stars for Quincy Wiggins and Sage, or does 5 star mean something different for some players than others? I'm looking at the only place that they were 5 stars, Rivals had both guys 5 stars. Nobody else had either of them as 5 stars, but very highly ranked players across the board.
How are we writing off Quincy Wiggins already?
I think that Quincy Wiggins was hurt and is only 1 year in. So I think,
like, even if Quincy doesn't produce this year at a super high level, like, I'm still giving him one more year here. Like, it's not like Sage is a year older, sure, but Wiggins, I mean, come on, I think Wiggins could be really, like, 5 star. Sure, I don't know. Maybe not. He wasn't shouldn't have been technically a 5 star. Maybe, but I still have a lot of high expectations for Quincy Wiggins.
I'm with you, and we'll see about Sage. I mean, he's entering year 3. You said it. He's a little bit of a hybrid guy. Does he play nickel? Does he play safety? He hasn't gotten involved in the return game, which is something he did a lot in high school, actually. So, I don't know, maybe, again, only one service had those guys as 5 stars. A lot of time to go for Wiggins and still time to go for Sage. Obviously, this next year is one where he's going to play a lot, and you want to see kind of what jump he makes from now to then.
Yeah, obviously, I wasn't here for the Sage Ryan class, so I can't really speak to what everybody saw from him, but I thought he was, like, really, really freaking good in high school, so it makes sense why he would be a high 4-star type guy.
There were some women's and men's basketball questions in here. We'll get you to just answer those on the board, Maddie B, on a pod or whatever. But Jay Reyes.
The question is, what are the chances the men don't win another SEC basketball game?
There's a chance.
Damn. Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
There's a chance. Well, and then the next question is it Final Four? Is it natty or bust for the women? So,
boy, going each end of the spectrum.
Boy, are we in opposite ends of the spectrum here. Jay Reyes, last one, and he talked about a number of things here, but he kindly bolded the actual question. Are these young kids, young adults, too trigger happy to jump into the portal? I would say a lot of college coaches will say that kids are too trigger happy to jump in the portal. Not every kid. And I think as you get at bigger schools, it becomes a little bit tough. Here's where I think kids become too trigger happy. Mm-hmm. You're at a smaller school and you think that you've got a chance to go somewhere bigger and you get in and then there aren't spots. And all of a sudden you wish you kind of would have just stayed where you were. And this could affect, you know, non-Power 5 or lower Power 5 teams that, you know, guys enter, they think, oh, the grass is greener, I can go here. And either you go there and you don't play, or you don't go there at all and you end up kind of at a same situation just somewhere else. And then you're kind of behind the eight ball. So I don't think teams like LSU kids get trigger happy. Like, everyone that's gone in from LSU, I've understood the reasoning. Like, I get it. Like, except DeMario Tolan. I think there must've been more there than what was kind of public, but everybody else is looking for playing time. Like, I totally get it. And you know, if you're leaving an LSU, there's only like 5 schools you can go to that are bigger than LSU or have bigger expectations. So, you know, you're probably taking a step backwards in some regard, at least in terms of the level of kind of what you're getting out of the experience and expectations and all that. So I don't know. I think it happens. Yeah. That's the fear, is that here's the fear. There's too many kids in the portal versus spots available. So in a game of musical chairs, a lot of kids are going to get left out. That's where you're going to get this too trigger happy notion and debate come into play. And then he said, asked about the perspective on the future of NIL and college football and how that affects fan interest. I think with NIL, for me, it'll everything's cyclical, and they'll figure NIL out. And in a few years, we will not be talking about it in the way we're talking about it now, with a guy like Jaden Rashada saying this collective was going to give me $13 million to go to Florida. I showed up. They basically reneged on the deal. I'm not going to go there anymore. I think that seems to be the pieces in place of what's happening in a school like that. I think it's good, Matty B, that we haven't heard any of that kind of stuff with LSU, which I take it to mean Brian Kelly is not getting himself involved with guys who are going to hinge it on some major, major NIL deal. And that's the reason why you get into situations like this.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it'll be figured out, and probably not this year, maybe not even next year, but I think in a few years, I think it'll be figured out whether that is whatever the solution is and whatever that you think the solution should be, whether that's make them employees, whether that's to regulate things, however you want to do it. It will be figured out, and it will be simplified in a way where we don't have those situations like Jaden Rashada. So, we'll see how it bounces out. But I'm really just of the belief of, like, get through these couple years where it is chaos, and then at the end of the day, hopefully it's figured out, and hopefully it works out for the best for everybody, because the idea is right. The concept is right. Now it's just figuring out the execution.
I like it. That's it. That's all of them.
We did it. All right. Good. We had a little segment at the front end of the podcast to talk about the early enrollees. We got through all the mailbag questions. We'll be back doing these every Monday. So, like we said, these are for Bengal Tiger subscribers only. So subscribe to the Bengal Tiger. You get your free hat as well in there. So check us out. Latest on everything. Shay's been killing it with the portal stuff this entire offseason. Billy's been everywhere from San Antonio to California and everywhere in between for recruiting. So subscribe. We appreciate y'all for joining us. Leave a like, comment, and share, and we will talk to y'all later.